This sound clip starts on page 5 of lecture 4, page 5 of lecture 4, and it's a discussion, a very brief discussion of a paper by Sara Lauritsen, which was published in the journal Extremes, which is the scientific journal which is concentrated on extreme values, both probability and statistical questions. And what the paper does, it compares a number of different ways of estimating value at risk. And the comparison is used in a fairly standard way using something called backtesting, which is widely used in the financial industry. And the problem which is investigated is estimation of value at risk, VAR, the high quantiles of the lost profit distribution. And what the paper does, it compares a number of different methods. So on page 5, you see a list of these methods. It's empirical quantiles, the unconditional Gaussian method, the conditional Gaussian method, the generalized extreme value method in different forms, generalized Pareto or the peaks over threshold model pretending independence, generalized Pareto with declustering, and then things which may be well known to few of you who've gone to a Financial Time Series course, and which is new to the others of you, is something called GORGE, generalized order regressive conditionally heteroscedastic models. I think that's the abbreviation, and they do it conditionally and unconditionally. And these methods are compared and evaluated via using backtesting. So on page 6 is the data which is used. So it's the daily returns. It's not the negative returns, but the daily returns from two Danish banks, Danske Bank and Jyske Bank, and paper does, it constructs a synthetic portfolio which is 50 million Danish crowns in Danske Bank and 50 million crowns in Jyske Bank, and then he studies this portfolio. And you see, and it's from January 1, 1985 to November 27, 1998. And the plots show you the returns, I think. So the first method which are used is the empirical and the normal method. So that's what I'll talk about first. And here is a histogram of the data together with an estimated normal density. So maybe you can see it. It seems much more if you look at the histogram, then it seems like there's much more values in the middle, fewer values in between. And what you cannot see very well is that the values in the tails are larger in the observations than in the normal model. But if you look at the plot to the right, that's a normal QQ plot. And you can see it fits, normal distribution fits very well in the center of the data, and it does not fit at all in the tails. And the table shows the following. It's the value at risk in million Danish crowns estimated by the Gaussian and the empirical method. And the empirical method is that you just use empirical quantiles of the data. And the Gaussian method is that you fitted a Gaussian distribution to the data and then estimate quantiles from the fitted, using the fitted distribution. And they are looking at one day value at risk, so quantiles in the one day changes of the portfolio and the value of the portfolio. And this is done for different value at risk levels. So that's 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 99.9, and 99.99% value at risk. That is the negative quantiles of the value of the change of the value of the portfolio. And if you look at it, you can see that for low values, for 95% quantiles, the risk, the value at risk for the Gaussian method is 1.93, and for the empirical method is 1.66. So it's the Gaussian method estimates the risk to be higher than the empirical method. And here, of course, the empirical method is right, because that's what then you have enough data to use the empirical method. The same thing, it looks the same if you go to 96%, 97%. At 98%, the empirical method gives a higher or a bigger loss. 99, the empirical method gives a much bit bigger loss, and 99%, 99.9%, the empirical quantiles are much smaller than, or much more negative than the Gaussian quantiles. This is just what is shown by the QQ plot, really. And then when you look at the 99.99% quantile, well, then the empirical method doesn't work, because you don't have enough observations. You don't have 10,000 observations, which is needed, at least 10,000 observations, which is needed to estimate quantiles which are this extreme. And what's written below the table, to assume that returns are normally distributed, and IID gives easy calculations also for complex portfolios. But in reality, almost always, I think, the distribution doesn't fit in the tails, and typically independence is not okay. So the normal distribution doesn't really, the normal method doesn't really work. And there's nowadays a pretty big consensus about that in the financial industry. It wasn't like that 30 years ago. And the problem with the empirical method, it doesn't give any estimates at all for really extreme quantiles. And it gives very variable and uncertain estimates for quantiles which are not quite as extreme, but still extreme. And the next slide, page 8 of lecture 4, is a question of the assumption of independence. So the paper checks whether these returns are independent or not. And for those of you who've seen time series, then what one typically does to check independence is one, of course, computes autocorrelations. So the autocorrelation of a time series at lag 1 is the correlation between the value at lag 1 and lag 2. and the correlation between the value at leg 2 and leg 3, and the correlation between leg 3 and 4, and so on. So what you think about is that you get vectors, which is a value at time 1 and 2, that's the first vector. The value at 1, 2 and time 3, that's the second vector. The third value is a value at time 3 and it's the first component, and the value at time 4 is the second component, and so on. And then you get a number of two-dimensional vectors. And you can just, as you're quite used to from basic statistics, I'm sure, you can compute the correlations between the first and the second values in these vectors. And these things are called order correlations because they're correlations of values in the series with itself. And then you can do this not for the space, the first and the second value and the second and the third, but you can also look at the first and the third value, that's the first vector, the second and the fourth value, that's the second vector, and so on. So you look at the correlation between values which were one step separated from one another. So that the order correlation at lag 2. And you go on like this, and the plot to the left shows a plot of these order correlations. And you can see that there's maybe some to the left plot is just the returns, except correlations makes most sense if you have a normal distribution. So one has transformed the data to make them normal, so you have measured data on a different scale. And you can see there seems to be some, a little bit of correlation, maybe 0.2 between the neighboring values in the time series, but then no correlation. And if you look, but then instead of the returns, you looked at the transformed returns, you looked at the squared transformed returns, then there is a lot of order correlation. This is completely standard in financial time series. There's always, very often, there's very little correlation between the values themselves, but there's a lot of correlation between the squared values. And the explanation, well, as a theoretical explanation for this, if there was a correlation between the values themselves, traders would use it to make money. So that's corrected by itself. But the squares is measures when times with a lot of variation in the time series, which seem to last for a while, and then periods with lower variation. And you get correlations between the squares, which tells you about the variance of the time series. And you can see from the squared transformed returns that's a clear and strong dependence in this portfolio. So any method which doesn't take dependence into account is likely to give misleading results. However, if you look at block maxima, say 42-day block maxima, that's approximately 2 months, then if you do the same analysis, same correlation analysis, they seem to be approximately independent. The figure is in the paper. I don't show it here on this slide. So more plots here. It's on page 9 of lecture 4, page 9. So what that says is that the generalized extreme value distribution fits the data well, and 42 days maxima is interesting for firm survival, but not for the question which one was interested in the paper, is how one is the one overnight VAR. That's something traders typically have to think about. That sets limit on the bets they can make. So one wants to get overnight war. And then, but the, going back to the good fit, you can see really that the fit for the generalized extreme value distribution seems quite good. If you look at the left plot, it's a PP plot for the for the observations against the 40 day of the fitted to the 42 day block maxima, seems to fit very well. The same thing if you do a QQ plot, the generalized extreme value distribution seems to fit very well. So, and on the right, you can see a return on level plot. I haven't told you what that is. You can see what it is in Stuart Coles' book. But again, quite a good fit, even if you can see that the sort of outer lines, these are confidence intervals. They are quite wide when you get sort of past 15 or something like that. So, but now if you want to get to the overnight VOR from this well-fitting distribution, the distribution that fits the data, then from computations we did in the a bit earlier in this slide, one can see that the alpha quantile of the overnight profit and loss distribution can be estimated by the alpha to the power n theta of the n day maxima. So here one should estimate theta from the data, the extremal index. So you remember how one did, that's when you somehow identified clusters of large values, and then you counted the number of clusters and divided them by the total number of observations, and then you get an estimate of theta. So, and then n, you know, that's the number of observations. So if you want the alpha quantile of the overnight profit and loss distribution, well, then you take the alpha to the n theta quantile of the, say, 42-day maxima. That was what we looked at in the plots before. So if you have the distribution of the 42-day maxima, you also know the alpha to the n theta quantile of the maxima. So alpha is the alpha you want for the profit and loss distribution. That's the level for the value at risk. And then you don't compute that quantile of the n day of maxima, but you find the alpha to the 42 times theta quantile of the end day maxima. And that's the answer you're looking for. But of course, this theta is difficult to estimate, so it may be better if you have another method. The block maxima method went very well. It gave good fits and everything. Its independent seems okay. The distribution fit well, but the problem is estimating the theta if you want to get to the overnight VOR, the overnight value of risk. Another model, which I'll tell you about very briefly, is something which is very standard in financial data analysis. You fit a model to the data. So you fit some model of how the stationary time series is generated, how it varies in time, how the dependence looks in the time series. So that's a time series model. Then you fit this for the data. This gives you predictions from the day you're at now to the day next day. And then you take the value next day minus the predicted value. That's your residuals. And if the model fits well, these residuals should be independent and have a distribution that you can handle, but we won't handle this distribution. So the thing is, you fit a gauge distribution, you compute the residuals, and then you compute the quantiles of the resulting estimated distributions of returns. And this typically is done by simulation. And this can be done conditionally using sort of the estimates for today, the volatility today. If you haven't seen gauge models, this is probably not so understandable. But it might be still be nice to have heard the words. Volatility, sort of, if high volatility, there's a lot of variation. Low volatility is little variation. So if you do it conditionally, you use all the information you have up to date, to now, and then you use that to estimate the value tomorrow. And then you look at quantiles of that, or you do it conditionally, which is for the long run behavior of the portfolio. And the plots down there, you can see the volatility, sort of the estimated standard deviations of the value tomorrow, given that you know everything which has happened up to today. And the lower one is a plot of the residuals. So this was not necessarily very understandable if you don't know the gauge modeling, but you can understand more from reading the paper, and some of your friends will have probably know about Financial Times series, or you can look it up in Wikipedia, and then you'll understand more if you're interested. So now the peak sale threshold method is illustrated on page 11. So this is page 11 on lecture 4. And earlier we looked at the peaks, there were thresholds. That is, we've looked at the negative returns. Here, the paper looks at the returns. So if one is interested in losses, you're interested in small values or big negative values of the returns. And this is, I mean, it really doesn't matter. If you take what we started with and take the returns and take minus returns, you get back to the situation we're in. But the paper looks at this, like it looks at it like this, so I'll continue doing that. So for the peak sale threshold method, in the top you look at the all the values below below some level, and then you define cluster minima using a separation length R equals 40, and you use the U as minus 0.98, and that gives you the lower plot, and that's the values you use for the to do the just standard peak sale threshold modeling as you've done before, though with the minus signs, which you have to think about. Now the methods to calculate value at risk uses backtesting. And the idea how this works is that you compute the value at risk, one day value at risk, from the first 6 years of the data, see if it's if this value at risk is violated. That is, that if the return in the next day is lower than the value at risk, you estimated the value at risk at one of those seven method, I think it was. Then you get a violation if next day is lower than the estimated value at risk, you get no violation otherwise. Then you move the entire thing one step, one day forward in time. So you look at day two after the first 6 years, and then you look at the 6 years, and then you fit the model to the 6 years before that. So that's almost all the data you've just taken away one day. Then you again do the same thing and see if there's a violation. Then you move the entire procedure two steps and see if there's a violation and so on. That's back testing. And then you compute the number of violations. And then you can see in the plot, in the tables, you can see not just the portfolio we talked about, but a number of different portfolios. So it's Standard & Poor's 500, Bang & Olufsen, Carlsberg, DSI 1912. I don't really know what that is. ISS is a sort of cleaning company, I think. Norvo, you all know what it is. Svendborg is another Danish company. And you look at the number of violations and the expected number of violations. And the expected numbers is in parentheses. So if the method is good, then the values and the values in parentheses should be about the same. And you look at the empirical method, and you can see, of course, that it, as expected, the values without parentheses and the values of in parentheses are reasonably similar, in particular for the lower value at risks, for the 95% value at risk. And you can also see, as expected, you can just not compute the 99.99 quantiles using the empirical method. And actually, if you look at the 99.99% quantiles, the empirical estimates seem pretty good. It's a bit surprising that they are as good as they are. Then we have the unconditional Gaussian method, which just doesn't really work. The conditional Gaussian method is a variant of this. I won't talk about it. You can see it in the paper. And then you see the generalized extreme value results and so on. And it's interesting to look at these numbers and think about which of them of the models are good. So this was, let's see, I was on... this was on, I think, page 12. And page 13, you just see the continuation about this table. And you can see which methods seem to work best and which portfolios I work best. And one should expect that individual, in particular, if you look at it a bit carefully, one should expect that the Standard & Poor's would be much different than the others, because that's an index consisting of 500 companies, while the others contains only one or two companies. So one would expect there to be more variation in the individual portfolios than in the Standard & Poor's. Whether this is the case or not, well, you can look at it yourself. And it's sort of fun to look at this. So please do a little bit and think about it. And sort of to wrap up, backtesting is that you use the first part of the data to estimate the value at risk, and then you see if the next value exceeds this value at risk or not. If it exceeds it, then you have a violation. If it doesn't, you don't. Then you move the entire thing one day, do the same thing, you fit the data to the first port of the fit the model to the first port of the remaining data, then see if the next day there is a violation and so on, and then you count the violations and you get this table. And this was done for a number of different ways of estimating value at risk. And it is useful to try to see how well different models work, and to try to think about, speculate about why they work or why they don't work so well. Page 14 is just a continuation of the same table. And it's a good idea to read the paper. You will learn more from it, and it's interesting. So thank you.